our brand is sort of this natural, sustainable family. And people do love that. We'll lead our newsletters with a picture of the beach or of my son or, you know, something interesting or a bird that we saw that's rare or something. So it's just not all about sell, sell, sell. There's a sort of the story of us as well. We definitely get responses that people appreciate that.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan Podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. I would like to start this episode with a little shout out to one of our lovely listeners. We get a lot of pleasure when you contact us via email, via DMs, mentioning us on social. So I wanted to give a huge thank you to Destiny Flaherty from Princess Polly in Australia for letting me know I had, and this is truly embarrassing, but I had robot tech set up all wrong on the website for this show. Truly embarrassing, but Destiny let me know. She dropped me a message and went, Chloe, did you know your robot's text is awful? I went, no, Destiny, I didn't, but I will go try and fix it now. And then she even checked I'd fixed it properly. So Destiny, huge thank you. Huge, huge, huge thank you to you. And it's quite kind of cool to be getting to mention Destiny in this one, because in this episode, we are going to the opposite side of the world. We have got a guest coming in from New Zealand. Before we get into me telling you a little bit about what's coming up in this show, though, we are a show funded by our sponsors. They make all of this possible. So brands, lovely listeners, excuse me for a second or two whilst I speak to our supplier side listeners. We have opened up our 2025 sponsorship calendar. We've got a little bit left in 2024, but 2025 is available for sponsorship. We've tweaked the packages a little bit. We are going a single sponsor. Just one sponsor per episode for the whole of 2025. So if you are interested in sponsoring this show, now would be a brilliant time to be getting in touch with me. We're also going to be doing much more themed content. So if there is a particular theme you'd like us to cover, maybe home and garden, maybe beauty, maybe fashion or carbon neutral or secondhand, let me know and we will endeavor to find a way to fit that in for you. So if you are interested in sponsoring this podcast in 2025, then please head to ecmp.info/sponsor. That's ECMP, short for e-commerce master plan.info/sponsor, and get in touch via that form and I will get back to you very, very quickly. Okay, that bit's over and done with. Let's talk about the episode. As I said, we're heading to the other side of the world. We're heading to New Zealand for this episode. We are chatting to a jewelry maker who has created a business that's thriving across their physical store, across wholesale, and across online. We are talking about lots of stuff. I cannot believe how much we managed to fit into this interview, but the three key things for me would be around retention, how he retains and drives repeat purchases, which is a mixture of loyalty program, email marketing, and story. So that's all coming up. The second thing would be his approach to wholesale, and we get quite deep into how he manages concession selling rather than just wholesale selling. And concession selling is where you give the stock to your retail wholesale partner. So you give them a load of stock and then they only pay you for it as they sell it, which increases your margins, but gives you the risk of the stock. So he talks about how he makes that work, who he gives it to, when it works for him, and so on and so forth. So an interesting alternative way, because I know a lot of you are busy working up your wholesale sales. And then the third thing is the low carbon nature of the business, how they go about creating must-have jewelry items from recycled elements. We talk a bit about the sourcing the raw products, a bit about the inventiveness of the product design, and a few more elements as well. So yeah, there's loads of great stuff in this one. So please make sure you listen right to the end of the episode so you don't miss out on my guest's top tips, which, as you know, are frequently described as the best bit of this show, and also my own take on this episode. DoFinder's upgraded intelligent product recommendations make it easy to increase your revenue with little effort. The AI-powered system automates cross-selling, ensuring your customers see exactly what they need and what they didn't even know they wanted. It also leverages real-time search data to provide personalized, relevant product suggestions that drive sales and boost average cart values. With a simple setup and continuous optimization, DoFinder's recommendations seamlessly integrate into your site, saving you time and resources. Discover the impact of intelligent recommendations today. Start your free trial at dofinder.com and watch your sales grow. Go to ecmp.info/dofinder. That's ecmp.info/dofinder. ecmp.info/dofinder. Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organize the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook. And now to introduce our special guest. Nick Faint is the founder at Stone Arrow Jewellery, a multi-channel jewellery retailer selling recycled glass jewellery from New Zealand. Founded over 25 years ago, they now sell via their own physical and e-commerce stores, as well as wholesale, totaling around $500,000 a year and are growing at a steady annual 20%. Hello, Nick.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Brilliant to have you here. We don't often get guests from New Zealand, so it's always lovely to get to see a little bit of what's happening on literally the other side of the world. So thanks for being here. How did you get into e-commerce?
I did straight wholesale for quite a few years. And then I started in a small way doing e-commerce, but it was really the COVID thing. I found myself with a lot of time on my hand. And I just sat down, looked at the website and went through every photo and every description and talked to my graphic designer, who also had lots of time on his hands. And yeah, so it was actually a real COVID story, really. And when that first lockdown ended, we had the most massive 2 weeks, like bigger than Christmas, which is usually our, it was unbelievable. We did like $20,000 or $30,000 worth in a week. It's like everybody saved up all their buying and launched into it. Just after COVID, that first lockdown, yeah.
And that was via the website or that was via your other channels?
That was via the website, yeah. It was all via the website.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow. So it was definitely a COVID time well spent.
It was, yeah, definitely, yeah. Now, I was also somewhere very beautiful, so it was. I got to do that and hang out somewhere beautiful in nature, so it was good, yeah.
Excellent, cool. So, and then we've seen several businesses that got online fever, I suppose, during COVID, then retreating from it post-COVID. For you, it sounds like it's become a bread and butter part of the business now. Would that
definitely
be fair to say?
Yeah. It's the biggest part of the business now and the part that's growing the fastest. Yeah, like New Zealand's only so big. So the online has got way more potential for expanding. Like we sell quite a lot in our little gallery in summer when the tourists come in, but that can only go so far, you know? So yeah.
I think one of the most difficult things to do in retail of turning a tourist buyer into a long-term buyer.
Definitely, yeah.
Is that where the online growth has come?
Yeah, I think so. We have a lot of, we've got a really strong customer base of people who just love us. And like we do newsletters and, you know, put pictures of my kids and things. And, you know, people just love our newsletters and the Facebook. And so we have a lot of repeat customers, yeah, which works really well. And we have a loyalty program, good loyalty program too, which also helps, I think. Yeah.
I think a lot of people, especially both in the physical tourist trying to then sell online and then in the jewelry space, struggle to get that repeat buying going on. So for you, it's been about story, loyalty, email. Would that be kind of the three pillars of your retention program?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely. Email's great. Like, that's always been the best email. We've started spending a lot more on social media advertising, but the newsletter that goes out every 2 weeks just outstrips everything, really. Yeah. And obviously it's cheaper too.
Yes, it is. Once you get email working, the ROI is, oh, it's a lovely thing.
It is, yeah.
So let's backtrack a bit. I'm sure we'll come back to some of that in a minute, but I want to let the audience know a little bit more about your business first. So you're in New Zealand and you're selling globally via the website?
Yeah, we sell globally. Still mostly to New Zealand, but definitely quite a lot around the world too, yeah.
And tell us a bit about the product, because I described it quite simplistically and kind of underplayed the genius of your product in the intro by saying it's recycled glass jewellery, which I think conjures up all kinds of images for people, which are highly unlikely to be the standard of your jewellery. So tell us a bit about the product.
Yeah, well, so we've sort of invented lots of ways to make our designs using the medium of bottles that we cut up. So we're trying to make designs that are just totally beautiful on their own and you wouldn't even know they're recycled. And it's just a bonus that they're made of a recycled material. And like, we have them on the wall in the gallery and people often don't know what they are, even though there's a sign right next to it. They're still like, what is that? So we're basically like melting it, sandblasting it, tumbling it. We've got this way of putting, we can put pictures on it, basically in the kiln, fuse iron to the surface of it to make this picture. And yeah, we're just constantly trying to find new ways to create different things with it. And there's the bottles like Bombay Sapphire Gin, that I don't know if you know, that light blue gin bottle, that's one of our most popular colors, and green and dark blue. We're kind of limited by the bottles, which is quite annoying. People are like, I want something pink, but we haven't found a pink bottle yet. But we've tried old windows, old red windows to make red. And yeah, we're just trying to stretch what's possible with using the glass to make amazing designs, basically.
How do you get those raw products? Because you've also got to have kind of like a, it's not like you can phone someone up and get, hi, we need another 100 Bombay Sapphire empty bottles, please. Because that would, you know, and even if you knew the people who manufactured the bottles, that would completely destroy the point, which is to be using them in the recycling chain. So how do you get a reliable supply of those recyclable materials?
That's a good question, because also we're in a reasonably remote, like at this place Golden Bay, which is sort of a tourist place, but it's over a big hill. There's only 5,000 people there, but we have people just drop them off all the time. Like Bombay Sapphire, we have hundreds of them in the shed, probably thousands actually. But there's other colors that we're really struggling to get now, like green. It used to be that all bottles were green, but now they're recycled. So now they're all this sort of olive color, which isn't so nice. So green's actually been quite hard to get, a pure green. Like only like Moët, Champagne and stuff is that really nice green. So it's some bottles it's really hard to get. Yeah, but mostly people drop them off or we get them from the recycling center. Yeah.
So it's still quite an organic way of processing them. You don't have like the direct dial of New Zealand's main bottle recycling man.
No, we haven't. I've tried a lot of different things. Oh, we also actually literally offer money for empty bottles for the ones that we need. We do a $5 payback or $30 worth of jewellery. We do jewellery credits for the ones that we can't get enough of. And mostly we get enough of them, but sometimes we run short. Yeah.
Oh, cool. I love the fact that it turns into this. It's kind of with the secondhand markets, you get the same thing, but with this element of recycling, it becomes its own like mini ecosystem that can lead to your customers being ever more excited about you. And I'm sure in the local area, it creates a lot of, I live in a very touristy area too, and it's always, all the tourist business will say, it's really important to have the locals on side because they're the ones who give the recommendations to the tourists. And if you've got locals going, oh yeah, Nick and his team, they do some really lovely jewellery made out of the bottles you're drinking out of. It's like, because you've got them involved in the process, I suspect that brings you more customers to the door.
Yeah, definitely. Like when, like all the people who run the motels and things, and it's a pretty small community. Everyone knows each other. Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, so and what does the team look like? Because I'm guessing you yourself are not making $500 worth of jewellery a year personally.
No,
so what does your team look like?
Actually, I hardly do. I pretty rarely make any jewellery nowadays. I'm just managing, which actually I really like. So people are like, don't you miss all that creative stuff? But I actually really enjoy just running the business. Yeah, so we've got usually another four people, sometimes some extras in summer when it gets really busy. Like we've got a woman who does the production, sort of the production manager, someone who does the office work, someone who's sort of like an engineer who does a lot of the inventing the processes to make things. And yeah, someone who does most of the social media. And everybody does a bit of everything though. Everybody has to pitch in and grind some glass occasionally. And yeah, there's a lot of grinding glass. It can get quite tedious, just like cutting little bits of glass and grinding them to a shape, because we're doing multiple pairs, you know, hundreds of pairs of a single thing. So there's a lot of sitting there on a Grimen diamond wheel, just grinding away. Yeah.
So not one grinder, but everybody grinds, basically.
Kind of, yeah. Some people grind more than others, but yeah.
I like that though, but everybody can muck in, because I suppose with the physical product being, you know, the physical materials being not a predictable supply, there are moments when you're like, we've just got a load of green in. we've got to turn this around quickly to get ourselves back in stock, I suppose.
Yeah. Or just like in spring, I do a sales trip to all my wholesale galleries. And all of a sudden there's $60,000 worth of orders and you don't really know what you're going to sell before you go. And then it's like, you've got to have all that stuff. Yeah. Each design, enough of each design, each color, because each design has multiple colors and it's quite complicated to get enough of everything at the right time. Yeah.
I was going to move on to talking about the wholesale piece, because I think it's something which it feels like the industry of the last few years is kind of like waking up to the potential of wholesale, and everybody is slowly realizing there are multiple different ways to do wholesale. And sometimes it's going to a massive, you know, show and having a stand, and sometimes it's just adding a wholesale website. And then other times it's doing what sounds like you do, which is you've got these relationships and you physically go and see them lay out the wares and they place their orders once a year, twice a year.
Oh, no, we do. I do a sales trip once a year just because I've found I sell a lot more if I meet them. But we have a wholesale website as well. And, yeah, we're getting orders all year, but mostly like the lead up to Christmas is the main time, and then there's summer after that, and then winter's the downtime. We do some on consignment and we sell some outright. So even in wholesale, there's two different, like some of the galleries that sell heaps, I know it's worth having consignment stock in there because I know they'll sell more.
So consignment being, I'll attempt to explain it, Nick, and then you can tell me what I've got wrong, but consignment's where you give them a box of jewellery and when they sell it, they pay you, whereas wholesale, they pay you in advance.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So it's kind of like an incentive to your better wholesale customers. You're like, oh, you can kind of like unlock the consignment opportunity. Would it be fair to put it that way?
No, not exactly, because I get more of a cut if I do it on consignment because I still own the stock. So like it might be 40% consignment. So then I make a higher cut, but they don't need to buy the stock. Because if they have to buy the stock, they don't want to spend so much money. So if I do it on consignment, I can give them heaps of stock because I know that it'll sell. So it's kind of a win-win.
Got you. So they don't have you can take as much space in their store as they'll allow you because they're not constrained by cash flow.
Exactly.
And then because you're taking the risk, the cash flow risk, then you get a bigger margin, a bigger profit back on it.
Yeah.
Cunning. Very cool. And with those customers, do you go completely consignment or do you go partly wholesale, partly consignment?
Oh, no, completely consignment. It would be a nightmare to have a mix, yeah, because you've got to keep track of what sells. And then every month we send top-ups, like we keep a real track on. They send us what sells each month. And then we obviously it's in our interest to replace what sells as quickly as we can, because it'll, especially in summer when it's trucking out the door.
Yeah, definitely. And would you ever start with someone on consignment, or is it always they've got to prove their value to you before you'll do that?
If I went in there and I could just tell that it was going to be good, you know, yeah, I can usually tell. Yeah, I would start if I could tell they were going to be good.
Got you. So your sales trips are both visiting existing customers and finding some new ones?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. Places come and go. But some places I've been with for 20 years, 25 years, yeah.
I'm starting to dig now, Nick, so you're welcome to tell me that this is confidential, Chloe. You can't go that far. But when you're looking for the new ones, are these people who've contacted you, people who've come through the website, you're like, oh, when I'm in the area, I ought to go and check them out because that looks interesting, or they've asked for you to come and visit them? Or is it a case that you know that this town is good, so you'll take a walk along the front and see who you might wander into whilst you're there? Is it kind of speculative, or is it very well planned?
All of the above, really, just depends. Yeah, sometimes I'll go cold calling, like, because I don't want to have people too close together. So I'll know a place which I've got a feeling is going to sell well, and I'll hunt out the best place there. But now that we've got a lot, we're online a lot now, so I do get people approaching me more and more because they just see us online on Instagram or Facebook, and they want to be a wholesaler.
It's fascinating how all those different parts start to play together to bring goodness in all channels of the business, even though the channels are very, very different.
Yeah. We're going to start exploring fair as well. Do you know fair? It's like a more international wholesalers thing. So I'm curious to see how that'll go. But we're going to, I've already started, in fact, listing that, but it's not quite live yet.
Yeah, they offer some phenomenal incentives for everybody.
Yeah, they take the risk out, which I think is great because the risk of being paid, the risk of losing it on shipping and yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see how that's changing the industry. I could waffle on about fair for a while, but we'll pause on that one for a second. You mentioned earlier about the work you're doing on retaining those customers around the email, the story, the loyalty. Could you do this without the story of you and the product process and the location you're in? Is that what hooks people in as much as the product, or is it more about the mechanics?
No, I think it is, like, because there's a lot of nature around us. So we're just kind of, our brand is sort of this natural, sustainable, family connected thing. And people do love that. You know, we often will lead our newsletters with a picture of the beach or of my son or, you know, something interesting or a bird that we saw that's rare or something. So it's just not all about sell, sell, sell. There's a sort of the story of us as well. And we definitely get responses that people appreciate that. We're just getting emails all the time from people who just love dealing with us. Yeah.
And obviously then you've got the hard to replicate story part, and then you've got the crunching marketing effort going on behind it, which is obviously the social, the email, and the loyalty program. What led you to decide that a loyalty program was worth implementing for you?
Just seemed like the obvious next step. And it's quite complicated though, loyalty programs. And we've had a bit of trouble with our app, like just mucking it up. And we've been with their customer service on and on and on. I would probably use a different app. I won't say who it is, but if I was going to start again, I'd use a different app. But it has been great. Just people get their points and then they come back and, you know, they might only get $5 off the next purchase with their points, but it's enough to incentivize them to spend $150 or whatever buying the next thing. And then they get the more points and, yeah, it's just great. It's like a no-brainer for me, the loyalty scheme.
Sounds like although you've got some tech issues, it sounds like you've got the point system set up in the way that really incentivizes. And I think often people get that wrong and, you know, fail to build it in the way that actually incentivizes customer behavior changes. Any tips for anyone who's currently trying to make their loyalty program drive that behavior change that you've succeeded in? Is there a way of working out the points? Is there a way of working out the criteria where they get something or what you give them?
I've seen some brands that just offer it at checkout without, just automatically comes on at checkout. And that doesn't make sense to me. Like, we send them a newsletter and it says you've got this many points, and then they can get a code and then they can claim them. But it's like they have to, it incentivizes them to get another purchase, not just get a discount when they're purchasing anyway. It's like they need to, it needs to be the incentive that they want to go and buy something else because they've got this money. So, yeah, I think the email marketing is probably the biggest part of it, I think. like every time we send out a newsletter and it says you've got this many points to spend and then maybe a little bit of a deal or something, then that's probably our most successful newsletter is the loyalty points one.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are.
DoFinder's upgraded intelligent product recommendations make it easy to increase your revenue with little effort. The AI-powered system automates cross-selling, ensuring your customers see exactly what they need and what they didn't even know they wanted. It also leverages real-time search data to provide personalized, relevant product suggestions that drive sales and boost average cart values. With a simple setup and continuous optimization, DoFinder's recommendations seamlessly integrate into your site, saving you time and resources. Discover the impact of intelligent recommendations today. Start your free trial at dofinder.com and watch your sales grow. Go to ecmp.info/dofinder. That's ecmp.info/dofinder. ecmp.info/dofinder. Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organize the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook.
It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our business to the next level. Nick, are you ready for the top tips?
Yes.
Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
I'm going to go with the Hammersley Brothers' Ultimate Guide to E-commerce Growth, which is actually how I heard about your podcast because you were on their podcast. Oh, it's just a really pragmatic, simple, step-by-step guide to looking at the KPIs and the most important things on a website. Like, I haven't seen it so clear and simple, simply laid out before. So yeah, I think it's great. Yeah.
It is an awesome book and one I'm very jealous I didn't write myself. Anyone who wants to hear a bit more about that book, episode 229, the brilliant Ian Hammersley has joined me on the show to talk about the book, The Ultimate Guide to E-commerce Growth. So I'm loving that recommendation on oh so many levels, Nick. Thank you. Next up then, the traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
It's hard to come up with a new one. I'm just going to go with email marketing again. It's just so good. And connected with that, the loyalty scheme. I've heard other people say that on other ones, but yeah.
Well, it is, isn't it? It's foundational. Are you a fan of the, you mentioned you're a fan of the loyalty points reminder newsletter. Are you more of a newsletter fan or an automated email fan? Where does your love lie?
Newsletter, definitely. Yeah. Well, we do automated emails too, but I like the newsletters, yeah. Because you can put a little bit of personality into them as well. It doesn't just have to be a cold sell thing.
I was going to say, with all you've said about the power of how the story's having that impact in your business, I'd have been very surprised if you said, yeah, the abandoned basket. That's the one I love the most because there's no story in that at all. So love that answer. Okay, the tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
Recently, we were looking at the photos on our website. We've got well over 100 photos and we were wanting to get them better. And I found this app called Kira AI and we just ran all the photos through it and it just sort of blinged up the photos. It's just sharpened them and just made them I just gave them an extra 20% sort of flashiness. And then we used another one called Pixel CU, and we added a drop shadow to them. So we blinged them up and added a drop shadow, did that to all the photos on the website, and the website just looks so much better. Yeah, that's been great for us, like, rather than reshooting the entire thing.
Yeah, that is a lot less work and replicatable as well.
Yeah.
Let's get the spellings of those. Kera AI, how are we spelling that one?
K-E-R-A.
Yep, I had that damn wrong. And Pixel CU, how are we spelling that one?
That's P-I-X-E-L-C-U.
An app that's actually how it sounds. That's always a novelty.
Yeah.
Awesome, Nick. Love those two tips. So, guys, that was Kera AI for giving the images that 20% extra bling, and then Pixel CU for adding the drop shadow to everything. Okay, the final top tip now, Nick, the carbon top tip. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
You know, I don't know if this is cheating, but I just think what we do, just making jewelry out of bottles. And yeah, everything we do is... yeah, just such a low carbon footprint. Yeah, we did a, I don't know if this is relevant, but I'll add it on, which we were being carbon positive. We registered to be carbon positive. It cost us $1,200 just to measure how much carbon footprint we had. Then it cost us $300 to be carbon positive. And it was just such a waste of money, but it also made me realize how low our carbon footprint was already. And so we scrapped that, and now we're paying the money to plant trees instead. So that made way more sense to me.
I'm really glad you added that, because I think it's fascinating that I get why big businesses need to track it and need to pay the money to track it, to keep, you have to be, what, you know, what is, what's tracked gets measured, gets impacted. I totally get that. But for small businesses like yours and like mine, I could spend 3 weeks working out how to track all of our carbon footprint, or I could spend that time going through our YouTube back catalogue, deleting stuff, and going through our Dropbox and deleting stuff from the cloud, or making fundamental changes. Or like you said, we could spend $1,500 a year on tracking it and getting a badge, or we could spend that having a positive impact. And I think sometimes we have to take that step back and go, hold on a minute.
Yeah.
Is this the fundamental goal being, let's do something good for the planet?
Yeah.
This is not improving it. For some businesses, it's really important to spend the money on the measurement, the tracking, and the badges. But sometimes it's not worth doing that, and you're better off planting some trees.
Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah. And it feels a lot better to me. Definitely.
So I'm very pleased you did bring that up. Definitely relevant to the carbon top tip. Nick, before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media, please?
Yes, I can. So it's our website is stonearrow.co.nz. Just Stone Arrow, yeah. And yeah, same on Facebook and everything. It's just all Stone Arrow, yeah. Instagram.
Go check them out, everybody. Nick, it has been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. I cannot believe how many things we've touched on and how much brilliant advice you've given the audience. So thank you so much for being on the E-commerce Masterplan podcast and being so generous sharing your experience with us. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Loads of great stuff there from our chat with Nick. I like the thing about retention, where he was saying you've got to get that story into the emails, and how they're really running retention through their newsletter program, but getting that good quality content in there, but also having the loyalty program with the incentives that are working to drive. What was it he said? They've got enough points for $5 off, and then they spend $150 on jewelry. That is a very good use of a loyalty program. That is promotions that are driving the activity you want to see. And I thought the piece about concessions was absolutely fascinating, how they juggle that alternative way of providing stock to the wholesaler to both get a better margin and to make sure they're capitalizing on that opportunity by taking the cash flow implications away from the retailer who's selling the stock. Definitely something I've heard of before in the kind of like the gift shop, touristy art gallery space. It definitely happens a fair bit. So might be one worth checking out if you are moving into that wholesaling arena. And also loving the piece he was saying about those sales, that sales odyssey, I suppose, that he undertakes each year to go and visit his wholesale customers, because he sells more and he can do that scoping out of new locations to sell into at the same time. So a load of quite diverse but really great advice there from Nick. You can get your hands on the notes from this episode, including the top tips and links to all the things we mentioned, by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast, or use our direct episode short links. That's ecmp.info/the number of this episode. Just put that into the URL bar and you'll be redirected straight to the right episode page. And of course, that also works if you want to go and hear my interview with Ian Hammersley talking about the book that Nick recommended, which would be ecmp.info/229, she says, nearly forgetting the right number. Once you get to the website, you can, of course, add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of the other things I share to help you improve your business. If you would like to be a guest on the show, then you can do what Nick did, because Nick is on this show because he applied to be a guest. He went to ecmp.info/guest and put in an application, and then ended up here recording with me and is now live being listened to by all of you. So if you think you'd love to come on the show, have a chat with me, get listened to by all the rest of our listeners, then ecmp.info/guest, put in your application. Thank you for tuning into this and every episode of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners to succeed and thrive with their business, including progressing on along that path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I hope you have a great week, and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.
It's time to download our 500 top tips to make your e-commerce business more profitable ebook. Go to ecmp.info/ebook now.